2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
What's up, Army, and welcome to another edition of the Tacos Fast 17. It's only the Fast 17 this time, because we are at the Clash at Daytona, sponsored by Advance Auto Parts. And used to be the Budweiser Shootout, but also used to be raced on a Saturday as well, but is going to be raced tomorrow on a Sunday. Good old Sunday racing, the first slate of the year for the NASCAR DFS season, which is going to be a blast. The last few seasons have been amazing. The Clash is very different. It's very similar to the Tournament of Champions in golf, where you start out the season with this ridiculously tiny field, and this all the strategies that people learned from last year kind of go out the window, because even if it was a full field event, it's at Daytona, so anything can happen. There are a limited number of laps, and again, anything could happen with those. The fast laps, which are twice as impactful as lead laps, are just kind of randomly dispersed to the guys in the back, so just tons of variance here, and that's going to just be the key this week. So I'm going to run through the field and kind of like try to figure out how to best work this chaos that we're about to see, and how to use ownership, which is just going to be key this week, ownership and game theory to put ourselves ahead of the rest of the field. And they've actually got some decent-sized GPPs for this event this year. A lot bigger than last year, that was for sure. So they're really pounding out the Daytona thing here. Fresh off of the football season, we've got tons of satellites all over the place for the 600K. A Daytona race. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We've got a lot of people coming in from football and don't know much about NASCAR. Only dabbled in NASCAR a bit last year. Or even, you know, people that have just played NASCAR really casually week to week, but don't, you know, understand the nuances of a small slate like this. So I'm going to break down Daytona for you real quick before we get into the field here. It is one of two plate races on the NASCAR circuit, 2.5 mile tri-oval asphalt super speedway with a 31 degree banking. So you basically never have to take your foot off the pedal ever. And, you know, the thing that makes plate races just completely different than all other races, you can see it in the statistics. You're either going to finish first or last in all these statistics because they're just so different than every other race type. I know that this is a 17-car field, but when looking at 40-car fields, at comparing them to every other track, guys starting 35th or worst score by far the most fantasy points on average than any other track, even more than Talladega. They average 38.8 fantasy points, and usually that number is somewhere around like 15. So, and all the other stats that you can see here, the percentage of the race under caution, by far number one with 19.8% of the race under caution. And it's second to last behind Talladega in average laps finished. So on average, a driver will only finish about 87% of his scheduled laps, which is pretty crazy. So we're going to see a lot of crashes. You see it every year at the Talladega and Daytona super speedways, the plate tracks. There's always the big one. It can't really be that big here with only 17 cars, but they will be all packed together, drafting together. And at an exhibition race like this, they usually just let full out and don't care if they crash or not. Although, with some of the rule changes that we'll be talking more about in the podcast with me and Brady next week, the season preview. There's some new block engine changes that kind of make it important for drivers to not crash their cars, to kind of hang on to their engines. So we might see them being a little bit less reckless, but, you know, towards the end of the race, they don't really care, you know. These guys are all, pretty much everyone in the field outside of Casey Kane is on a top-tier racing team, so they won't really care for the most part. They like to let loose and drive very aggressively. All of the most aggressive drivers are at this race. So, I mean, really all the analysis that you need to do in this race is just know that everything points to this being extremely high variance. As far as the projections go, everyone's projected to be somewhere in the 8th to 10th place range, pretty much, right around the middle. Like, on average, you'll finish in 8.5 position in this field. It's hard to really project anyone to be that much higher from the baseline because it's just so random. You're pretty much going to land in a random spot. And I added a new tab to the research station here for the Daytona Clash, and it's called Minimum and Maximum Fantasy Points. And the minimum speaks for itself. It's like if they crash and finish dead last, how many points they get. And you can see Brad Keselowski starting in dead last. He crashes on lap one. He gets 27 fantasy points, as where if you take Austin Dillon, he crashes, he gets 11. So you can... all the scores are going to be, they're all going to have quite a solid floor, because it's going to be really easy to have a guy who gets like 20 or 30 points, because you're, even if you finished in last, you'll still get scored like 17th for a usual field, and you don't even start to reach zero until you get down to like the 40th spot. So everyone's guaranteed a good baseline of points. We're going to take that into account a lot this week. Salaries aren't going to matter at all. And it's probably going to benefit you to leave quite a bit of salary on the table in most of your lineups, because if you fill out your roster and use all of your money, with the most expensive person on the board being Super Chalk, that's just going to end in you tying with like 40 or 50 other people. So you want to be a little bit more unique. Just one of the problems we're running into here is that Chalky strategies do really well here. Looking back at last year's data, I have the data for their odds and the salaries and everything. And actually, what my projected top lineup was, it was pretty easy for a lot of people to come to this one certain lineup, because it's just very obvious. You basically just kind of take the guys at the bottom and you do well. We can see this by, if you look at the race from last year, you know, you have the nuts lineup being guys starting 9th, 13th, 12th, 8th, 14th, and 16th. And then the next highest scoring guy after that is 17th. So no one starting in the top 7 did anything as far as scoring. And ultimately, laps led were almost irrelevant because everyone just got shuffled around so much, especially with the mandatory caution at lap 25. Things just get mixed up a ton. Looking at different ways that you could have attacked last year, the Nuts lineup had 303.25 points. If you just took the bottom 6 starting guys, which was definitely possible, you left plenty of salary on the table doing that, you got a score of 280, which is only 23 off from the Nuts, which is pretty good. Probably would have cashed in cash games and, I don't know, just like min-cashed in GPP. But the optimal from last year, that scored 289, a lot closer to the Nuts. And all that did was it took the back 6 guys, and then it took Joey Logano starting 9th, who's really good at plate tracks. And he ended up dominating a fair portion of the race there and scored the most fantasy points of anyone in the entire slate. And then if you just took the odds-on favorite, and you couldn't even do this with the salary cap, but just say you did. If you took the odds-on favorites, the top 6 guys, they only scored 250 last year. That was pretty bad. A lot of that had to do with, you know, Brad Keselowski, who started on the pole, led laps like he always does at the Clash. He ended up with, a grand total of 40 fantasy points despite all that domination. And that was mid-pack as far as fantasy scoring was concerned, honestly, for the week. So salaries don't matter. All that really matters is just taking guys from the back, but you got to think a little bit further, because if you just play 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or I guess I should say positions 12 through 17, which is going to be a pretty popular lineup this week, honestly. I think you'll see a lot of that in cash games, that exact lineup, because you can make it and it works. Yeah, if you just take the bottom six guys, then that's probably the optimal way to play, honestly. It's just you're going to tie with 100 people, so you got to think beyond that. Well, let's just go through the slate here. We'll get into the guys at the bottom when we get there. Let's just run through the guys up top first. Qualifying was done through a drawing out of a hat, so Austin Dillon got the pole, so we can safely fade the crap out of him. I mean, he's generally pretty good at plate races, but starting first in some of the worst equipment in the field, no thank you. Denny Hamlin starts second, and he is the best in the field at Daytona when looking at every single statistical category over the last few years. Best driver rating, average running position, 10th, average finish of 11th. And, you know, a bit of that was helped by the 0.1 second differential between him and Truex 2 years ago at the Daytona 500, but he's still always been a very good plate racer. He's not the odds-on favorite. That's actually Keselowski at 6-1, but he's tied with Logano and Kyle Busch at 7-1 for odds-on favorite to win the race. He's got Logano right next to him, or I guess behind him in third place. And honestly, Hamlin, it's kind of expected. We saw Keselowski do this a few times over the last few years here, where the second place driver would actually take over. And it's hard to tell whether the top or the bottom is going to get a better run. You kind of want to start on the bottom that's had the most success, but sometimes the top can just get a better run and it'll just send you out flying. I feel like with how this is set up, Hamlin's got Jones right behind him. So you've got your two teammates set up together. Dylan Logano. Yeah, Logano's going to be slowed down by Dylan a little bit. I think Hamlin just kind of runs away with the lead and dominates a little bit. However, even if you give him dominator scoring, he returns like no value. He isn't even in the top half of the field as far as fantasy scoring is concerned. That's just because he's starting second. If he's going to randomly finish between first and 17th, most of the time he's going backwards. In fact, almost every time unless he wins. And he has won twice of the last 4 years at the Clash, but you can't really make the play here. I think other people will see that he's very good and has wins at the Clash and whatnot. I mean, not quite as good as Logano and all that, but they know that he's won the Daytona 500 and stuff, and he's a good plate racer. Really a solid driver overall, actually. He finished 98% of the laps last year. Only driver better than him was Ty Dillon, actually. Kind of weird, but Hamlin's just super safe. But it doesn't matter how safe you are, anyone can crash at Daytona. Just don't play Hamlin, really. There's no real need to. I have the five top drivers, or I think the top six drivers through Truex, listed as dominators on the domination station. And you can pretty much either uncheck them and don't play them at all, or write in the rule that says no more than one. Just no more than one of these guys. Because maybe you might want to sprinkle like a very low-owned Jimmy Johnson or something, but that's just how I have the Dominator station set up this week, and it seems like the best way to make sure that it's not like, you know, using multiple guys up in the top six, because it's pretty much a dead zone as far as fantasy scoring is concerned. So Joey Logano, starting again behind Dylan there, won't have his teammate to help him out early like he's had the last couple of years, but he's still very, very good at plate races. The Penske Bros have won more races at Talladega and Talladega Daytona than every other team combined has over the last like 2 or 3 years. So it's obvious that you want to target Penske guys, and I had planned on targeting Logano, but it is what it is. He's starting third. Unless he just jumps out there and leads like 30 plus laps, it's not going to matter. He does have excellent history here. He's finished in the top six the last 5 years and won last year, but it wasn't really a dominating win or anything. But I don't know. I would mention 8,300 looks pretty freaking cheap, but price doesn't matter. So not huge on Logano, but if I'm gonna play anyone in the top five, it's going to be Logano probably. And in GPP, I might have maybe 7 to 10% share of Logano, maybe 5%. It's not gonna be much. Eric Jones likes to crash a lot, and he's starting fourth, so that's very concerning. Everyone in the field, he had the worst percentage of laps completed in 2017. And, it's just too easy to see him spinning out here and going from 4th to 16th. I'm not a big fan of the play here, and he's probably going to be one of the lowest-owned guys, I would imagine. That's the only reason you'd want to play him. And now we've got a guy starting 5th, Jimmy Johnson, who used to be quite the driver at the Clash and at Daytona, but last few years have been very rough for him at Daytona. Lots of crashes. He has crashed here at this event. I think he's crashed at the Clash 6 times in a row, maybe 7 times in a row. I don't know. He lines up, he hits the wall, he gets out of there. That's what he does. Starting 5th, I think he's going to be one of the lowest owned, along with Eric Jones. I'm not sure if it's going to be him or Eric. Maybe Casey Kane started 7th, but one of them is going to be the lowest owned. So it kind of makes them interesting. And at first I had thought, Jimmy Johnson, 7,700 is super, super cheap for him. But, the pricing is pretty wonky for this thing. But, man, I don't know. I think he'll be owned just enough to make it just not even worth it. I think about just a fade starting 5th. Because really, just avoiding the top 5 is a good strategy in general. And then you've got your first play that you can really consider. I think a lot of people will consider Martin Truex Jr., the defending champion, starting 6th. 10-1 odds to win this thing. I guess I should have mentioned that Jimmy Johnson was 12-1. So it's kind of telling about how they're not strong with these types of tracks right now. Chevy just isn't super strong altogether. We won't really know until Atlanta with the new car. And Toyota is super strong. But Martin's not been very good at Daytona outside of a few second place finishes. Back in 2015, he came second in the Clash. But other than that, he's done really piss poor every single time. And at Daytona, he has a second place finish back in 2016. Almost a win. He almost won the dang thing, but it was about 0.1 second off of Denny Hamlin there for that Daytona 500, but that was really unlike him, because usually he either just crashes or doesn't do too hot. He's not that great of a plate racer, and I don't think he's that great at Talladega either. And if I know he's going to be a little bit more owned than he should, with him being, underpriced and the defending champion and all, that makes for a really nice fade starting 6th. Casey Kane, a dead minimum price, $5,500. I kind of am coming around in this play a lot. It's really hard for me to think of any pivots off of the obvious guys. And we know that playing the obvious chalky guys is going to do well in a slate like this. But if you want to win and separate yourself from the crowd, you really do need to find one of these pivots. And I'm kind of thinking about Casey Kane here. Everyone's going to be able to afford pretty much whoever they want, so there's no real need to go all the way down to Casey Kane. And if they're going to go down there, they're going to see Ryan Newman starting 11th, with Casey Kane starting 7th, and they're going to go with Newman every time, or they're going to go McMurray starting 16th big time, or Kurt Busch starting 14th. No one's going to play Casey Kane. He's the only guy here that's not an elite team anymore. He's no longer with Hendrick. He's gone down to Levi and Family Racing, taking over for Michael McDowell. And they actually did pretty well last year in that car. But it's going to be it doesn't really matter yet because it's a plate race. Everyone has pretty much the same equipment. So, I mean, Casey's been around, done this for a long time. Outside of maybe some initial growing pains, it's hard to see him not being just at least okay. He's not a good Daytona driver by any means. I'm just thinking of this as a potentially a pure ownership GPP play on what may be one of the lowest owned guys, if not the lowest owned guy. So that's my take on Casey there. He's just a GPP separator in a field where there really aren't a whole lot of them. And another guy like here, starting in eighth, is Ricky Stenhouse Jr. He won multiple plate tracks, won Talladega and Daytona last year. And the last time we saw him at this event, the Clash, he did finish sixth in 2016. He's not any sort of like really great plate racer, like a specialist. He's not like AJ Allmendinger is with those short tracks, the road courses. It's not like he's a ringer. He's just had some really good success. And Ford overall has had success with the plate, or with, has had a lot of success with plate racing over the last few years, with Penske being so dominant. And we've seen the Roush Fords also do very, very well at plate races. Both him and Bain were just great over the last few years. So Stenhouse, definitely someone that, starting in the middle of the pack, could either work his way up or just hold on the top five. And that might be, who knows, he might end up with, a second place finish or even a win. And that's just going to be the key play. And I don't see him getting past like 20% ownership. Again, with like Kane, it's sort of like for lack of options here. Stenhouse is someone I'm looking at just for that reason. Because it's way too easy to just recommend the bottom guys. And we're going to get to them. But it's this mid-range here that I think will make or break some of your lineups in GPP. Because you're not going to find sub 20% guys. You're not going to find more than like three of these guys be under 20%. Maybe only two of them. And I think you kind of want to be on them. Because at that point, with it being so random, you just want to be where other people aren't going to be. You got your first kind of chalky guy here with Kevin Harvick starting ninth. That's pretty good for him. I like this play a lot, even more than Stenhouse and Kane. I like this play as soon as I saw the starting positions come out, because there's a slight cognitive bias, I guess, between ninth and tenth place, the one digit, the two digits. People are just going to think like tenth and worse is where you want to go. Harvick has won here at the Clash back in 2013, a few top five finishes. I mean, he does pretty well, but again, that is kind of random. Same thing could be said for him at the 500. He either comes top five or he crashes. A lot of people kind of have that story here, but he's not really had a ton of like domination, but that's all right. Harvick is very good. He's like Hamlin, very, very good at staying on the track and, good at putting up fast laps. I know that's going to be something that's just going to go to whoever's in the back of the field. So kind of irrelevant, but I noticed that with him last year towards the end of the season. He's like a low-key beast at fast laps. But I guess he won't be able to use that to his advantage this week, but I think he's going to be... ninth. He could definitely move up to like top three or win this thing, certainly. As good a chance as anyone else. And the Fords, again, I kind of want to target Fords at least until we see something that doesn't suggest that Ford's just going to crush speed weeks. Kyle Larson, starting 10th, going to be very popular, I think. He started off his Daytona career like terribly. He was awful. Four races and four crashes. It was like 36 the worst finishes. It was really bad, but once he finished the race, he started doing pretty good. A few top 10 finishes at the 500 and a few top 5 finishes here at the Clash. He's cheap at $8,100. He's starting 10th, which is low enough for him to garner a little bit of attention here. He's not starting far enough back for me to go too in on, because there are just some better plays down lower. And I see him picking up about like 40% ownership. He's gonna be really popular for plugging and playing, just because Larson is very popular, like one of the hottest drivers in the sports right now. And $8,100 is gonna be exactly like Truex. People are gonna see that and go, "Whoa, it's too cheap." But I kind of like pivoting off of him, moving on to some of the other guys in this range, like Stenhouse, Harvick. And let's talk about the next guy. I like this play a lot. Starting 11th, Ryan Newman, $5,700. And he's certainly going to be the lowest owned of anyone, double-digit starting position or worse, by quite a bit. Definitely by quite a bit. Everyone else is going to be super ultra chalk. I don't think Newman gets to that point. He's not that great of a Daytona driver, although he finished top five last year. But that usually just suggests that you survived the race. It didn't really mean he dominated or anything. He really doesn't have that in him. I think he has zero lead laps over the last 5 years at Daytona. So definitely no domination upside there. And that's kind of something you do need, I think. But with Ryan Newman, you're just kind of hoping he finishes like top four. And I don't know, you just get more leverage going with a guy like Newman straight up over a super chalky guy like some guys we're going to talk about, like Chase Elliott, Kyle Busch, and down further. But it's really this range here from 7th through 11th, I think, make or break the slate. Because 12th through 17th starting position are just kind of obvious no-brainer plays. And you're not really going to, unless you like pick one to fade or pick one to go super, super heavy on, you're not going to really differentiate yourself much. Maybe you can just like mix and match a whole bunch of the bottom tier guys. But I think picking out the right one of these guys starting like 7th through 11th is going to be key to the slate. Now for the easy plays, Chase Elliott. $9,300, very overpriced for the slate, but it doesn't matter. That just makes me like him a little bit, but Elliott's never going to be under-owned. Starting 12th, we've seen he has won the pole at Daytona before. I mean, he crashed immediately after that, but still, he's at his only time at the Clash, he finished 7th, which is respectable. And it's really hard for me to project him. I think he's gonna break 40% in ownership. I don't know if he'll get too crazy because of his price, and with Keselowski at 9,500 being the ultra chalk and him at 9,300 might make it a little bit hard. But since you can so easily go down to Newman or Kane, I don't really care about that much. So I do like Chase. I guess he has as good of a chance as anyone else here to pick up some lead laps and dominate or whatever, but I don't know. Chase is just so popular. You know, his dad was always voted fan favorite year after year after year, and I don't think I've ever seen Chase not be, like, chalky. Even when he was going through a rough part of last year, he always garnered so much ownership. And I don't know, maybe with it being the very first slate of the year, and a lot of your NASCAR career is over, they might, you know, stick to just, like, they might not even think about any of that and just look at the fact that his odds are 8-1 and he's the second highest priced guy when there are like four or five guys with better odds than him underneath him. I don't know. It's just hard for me to say he's going to be a low owned because I just don't think he is. But I guess compared to like Kyle Busch or Jamie McMurray, Keselowski, or whatever he will be. But honestly, with all these guys starting 12th or worse, you want to have like 50% or more exposure to each of them. They're going to be like the core of your lineup. You're going to pick like four or five of these guys in every lineup. And they don't really need much analysis, honestly. I can tell you that Kyle Busch is Kyle Busch starting 13th. Three top three finishes in the last 6 years here at the Clash, you know. Likes to crash, but when he doesn't, he does well at Daytona. You know, a lot of people have this story, but just starting 14th or 13th and him being Kyle Busch, I mean, yeah, obviously he's probably going to move up to the top five and be a Very important play. So, yeah, there's not much to be said about it. He's just a really good play. Lock him in, and like, I don't know why you'd be playing cash, but anyone 13th or lower, definitely lock in cash. Kyle, Kurt Busch, Ryan Blaney. Oh, God, it's just so hard to provide much insight for this, because it's really straightforward. Kurt Busch here, starting 14th. I like him a lot. I probably like him the most out of all these guys. I see him out of the super, super chalk, like 13th and lower guys. He's going to be the lowest owned. Starting 14th, the Daytona 500 winner, although it was pretty much gifted to him because everyone in front of him crashed. He's not really much of a lap leader, but it doesn't really matter with him starting 14th. 6,400, just extremely, extremely cheap. Maybe if the same reason you'd play Kane, you'd play Kurt Busch. Just people are going to easily afford everyone that they want, even with Keselowski. And yeah, so starting 14th, Kurt Busch, just super strong play. Kyle Busch too. I mean, Ryan Blaney starting 15th. This is where it's the point where you almost have to play him. Fastest in the first practice, although that really doesn't matter. Looking back at 2017, the guys who did well in practice didn't. Yeah, they didn't do anything, at least for the 2017 clash. And every practice, you're going to see new people at the top of the leaderboard, because it's not like you have like a dominant car at a restricted plate track. It doesn't work like that. Practice times you can pretty much ignore fully, but I guess it's nice to see his fastest. And Blaney is very good at plate tracks. He always has been. It's his first time actually playing this. This clash format, and I think he's going to be kind of wild with it, you know, but you still want to make him a core play. And then McMurray, $6,200, starting 16th. I like him as probably, he'll be the guy I own more than anyone. I'm not sure if I'll go all in on Keselowski yet, but I think McMurray, I'm certainly going all in on, because I know there will be some guys that don't roster him. I know most of the field will. But he's so low, $6,200, that some people might not even make it down to him or feel the need to pay for him when they could, quote-unquote, improve and go up to, like, Truex or something. Probably going to go 100% McMurray, honestly, because he's not going to finish in last. He really, I mean, he's kind of aggressive, but he isn't really the one to just, like, get into an accident from the get-go. But I guess starting in the back, you are a little bit more prone to that, but still, you're locked in for 25 fantasy points guaranteed, and anything past that is just extra. When you get to this part of the field, you just can't not play these guys. I'll have to finish it here. The fastest of the fast. The odds-on favorite to win, starting in last place. Fastest 10-lap speeds in first practice, and that's your boy, Brad Keselowski. Who's started the clash out the last 3 years by dominating and leading laps. Last 3 years, he started either first, second, or third. And no matter where he started, he's jumped out to the lead. You're not going to see that this time, obviously, with him starting in the back, but the field's going to get shaken up. You'll probably see him leading laps after a while. We saw last year, he pretty much dominated this race until he hit a pit penalty. Shortly after the competition caution, but like, no one was touching him. He was working his stuff. If there's one driver in this field that I think is more likely to dominate than any other driver, it's not even Dylan starting on the pole. It's Keselowski. He just has a nose for finding lead laps at Daytona. And you see it here in the stats. He averages 25 lead laps per race going back to 2013. And the only person close to that is Hamlin, 22, and then they're just, like, way better than the rest of the field. The only driver with more than, like, 11 lead laps per race besides Denny Hamlin and Keselowski in this field is Jimmy Johnson, and all those came from when he was, like, winning back-to-back in, like, 2013. So, Hamlin, Keselowski, they're the class of the field. One's a good play, the other's not. Keselowski's going to be like, he'll pretty much be a good way to judge how chalky NASCAR is going to be initially. Because he could be like 80% owned if people are smart. But if people are dumb, he'll be like 60% owned. Right now, I have him pegged around 65, leaning, maybe pushing towards 70, because it's just a free play. He can't get any worse. And he's the odds-on favorite and all that, starting last. Excuse me. You could completely fade him and hope that he like crashes and finishes last, but that wouldn't even help you very much. He has 27 fantasy points guaranteed, no matter what. That's not going to kill anybody. So just lock in Keselowski and move on from there. And that'll do you the Tacos Fast 17. Because, there's not really much more to say about the slate. Be sure to utilize the Domination Station lineup optimizer. And for anyone that's listening that's not a member of the DFS Army yet, what are you waiting for? We just had another $100,000 winner just recently in NBA. It was amazing. We've had so many of those recently. Come check us out at dfsarmy.com. Use promo code TACO on sign up for a lifetime 10% off. And you get access to our in-depth cheat sheet, which we'll go over it more when we do the season preview. But it's just loaded with goodies. And I've been working on some new metrics that are going to be really insightful when looking at where fantasy scoring comes from and stuff. But we'll get into all that later. We've always got that locked and ready to go. We've got the Domination Station locked and ready to optimize. And let's get this money, Army. Let's do this. Until next week at the Daytona 500, I'll see you later.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get 2 free ebooks, as well as the secrets to unlocking a new level to your game.